So this is for Watch Time Bible School. We have our brother Stephen Hornhart with his subject, Behold, I Come, Blessed is He That Watches. This is class number 4, Go Your Ways and Pour Out the Vials of the Wrath of God. Brother Stephen, please.
Well, good morning, brethren and sisters. Very nice to be with you once again. Lovely morning. We trust you've all had a very, very good night's rest. We certainly had a wonderful time yesterday enjoying the activities around the Word and, of course, fraternising with one another. So welcome to our fourth study this morning. As Brother Adam has said, the topic for this morning is Go Your Ways and Pour Out the Vials of the Wrath of God. Now, brothers and sisters, this first five vials that are outlined for us in Revelation chapter 16 are all about God's judgment upon Catholic Europe. It's all about God bringing an end to an empire that had existed for over 1,000 years. And God was going to raise up a man of destiny to bring an end to the Holy Roman Empire. God was going to raise up a man of destiny who would give them blood to drink. Or you read of that, for instance, in verse 6, of Revelation chapter 16. And we read these words, For they have shed the blood of saints and prophets, and thou hast given them blood to drink, for they are worthy. And God would raise up this man, a man of destiny, to fulfill those very words there in verse 6 of Revelation chapter 16. Now, brothers and sisters, Napoleon, the man of destiny to do this work, he was one who came out or emerged from the French Revolution. In fact, Napoleon was 20 years old when the French Revolution broke out. And therefore, as a teenager, he could see this train coming down the track out of control. And as a man, Napoleon used the French Revolution to catapult him to stardom. But you see, Napoleon had a few problems. And one of the problems that Napoleon had was that Napoleon was born there, in Corsica. Why was that a problem? Well, a few years before Napoleon's birth, Corsica was taken by the French. And therefore, Napoleon grew up absolutely hating the French. And what's more, brothers and sisters, Napoleon could hardly speak the French language. He had a thick Corsican accent. And to add further to his problems, Napoleon was only 5'6". That's about there. So, brothers and sisters, here was a man who absolutely hated the French, could hardly speak the French language, was only 5'6", and 10 years after the nation of France went berserk and mad with bloodlust, saying we'll have no more monarchy, no more despot, no more emperor reigning over us, 10 years after that, in 1799, this man that hates the French, can't speak the French language very well, 5'6", walks into Paris and says, I am your chief consul, soon to be your emperor. That would never, ever have happened in the normal scheme of things. The angels were at work. God was at work, raising up this man. And therefore, brothers and sisters, he was a man who would be the heir to the revolution, and he would reorganize France and conquer Europe. He was a man of destiny. Now, before we have a look at Revelation 16 and the amazing sweep of prophecy and history and the work of the angels, I just want to have a look at this very important link. We've mentioned this once or twice before. This link between Revelation 11 and Revelation 16. Now, in our last couple of studies together, we have been considering the second half of the sixth trumpet in chapter 11, the second part of the second woe. And therefore, we've been looking at Revelation chapter 11, and that verse that is becoming very common to us now, we hope, verse 14 of Revelation 11, the second woe is past, the sixth trumpet, and behold, the third woe cometh quickly, the seventh trumpet. And of course, the seventh trumpet, or the third woe, containing these seven vials, five of which we are going to be considering this morning. Now, brothers and sisters, if you were to read Revelation 11 and verse 14, to follow the chronology of the story, you would go from verse 14, chapter 11, and you would spring straight into verse 1 of chapter 16, and you would pick up the flow of that seventh trumpet, or the third woe. So you go from verse 14, chapter 11, over there into chapter 16 and verse 1. Question. If that's the flow of the story, why are those remaining verses there in chapter 11 interrupting the flow of the story? Well, the answer of that, of course, is the remaining verses in chapter 11 from verse 15 to the end of chapter 11, we are given a broad-brushed overview of the seventh trumpet, or the third woe, typically of the apocalypse. Well, if the smooth flow of the story is from verse 14, chapter 11, to verse 1 of chapter 16, why then is chapter 12, chapter 13, chapter 14, and chapter 15 in the way, interrupting this smooth chronological flow? Time doesn't permit that we should go through it, but there are a number of very, very interesting answers to that question. Why is chapter 12 immediately placed there, interrupting the flow, and 13, and 14, and 15? A great little section for discussion if anybody would like to sit around sometime, and we'll have a chat about that over a latte. There are five espresso coffee machines I have found out. I haven't located them yet, but I know they're around the camp. I will hunt you down. So, brothers and sisters, there is a very interesting thing, 12, 13, 14 and 15 interrupting that flow. Be that as it may, further discussion perhaps. All right, now let's have a look at this overview as we did with chapter 11. Let's have a sweeping overview of chapter 16, and then we'll launch into the detail as much as we can in the time allotted to us. Now, very similar to chapter 11, chapter 16 climaxes in an earthquake. This is the third of the three great earthquakes. And therefore, you read in verse 18, there were voices and thunderings and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth. If you think the first earthquake in chapter 6 with the removal of pagan Rome was mighty, this one is far greater. If you thought the second earthquake in chapter 11, the removal of the French aristocracy and the removal of the Catholic hierarchy, was amazing, then this one is greater. But you will notice, there is the word Armageddon. That is not correct. Armageddon is not the third great earthquake. Armageddon is the last activity or event in the sixth vial. And therefore, when you come to verse 17, the seventh angel poured out his bowl into the political arena, and then there is a great earthquake. So this is a 40-year political, social upheaval where the kingdom of men will be swept aside, ushering in the kingdom of God. All right, be that as it may, we're considering now the first 11 verses of Revelation 16. Very brief overview, and then we'll dip our toe into some more of the detail. Well, we read in verse 2 that the first angel came and poured out his bowl upon the earth. Thanks, Brother Skip. We are having...
Leave them both on.
Sure.
Well, stereo.
Well, what? Just... I think we've been here before, actually. All right. That's great. Well, I've got me six guns, one on either side. Meet you down at the OK Corral. Oh, brothers and sisters, I feel like a robot. Hang on, let me just get this. I'm not big enough to wear all this. OK. Where were we? All right, an overview of chapter 16. Now, verse 2 says, "And the first angel poured out his bowl upon the earth." And then we have, in our third verse, the second angel pouring out his bowl upon the sea. Now, what you see in this second vial, brethren and sisters, an interesting statement, which we'll explore in detail in a moment, where it says the seventh angel poured out his bowl upon the sea, and the sea became as the blood of a dead man. Now, the blood of a dead man does not flow. It's congealed. So what you see in the second vial is that God congeals the flow of something, congeals the flow of blood, in order this connection from of the second vial to the third vial, in order that there might be a copious flow of blood in the third vial. Now you look at this interesting contrast or comparison. Stop the flow of blood, whatever that means, in the second vial, in order, verse 4, the third angel poured out his bowl upon the rivers and fountains of waters, and they became blood. Stop the flow of blood in order that blood might flow with celerity, with alacrity, that it might flow copiously in the third vial. Very interesting, as we'll see as we look at some of the detail in a moment. Well, our fourth vial is there in verse 8. And the fourth angel poured out his bowl upon the sun, and power was given to him, whoever he is, to scorch men with fire. Wait till you see that. Astounding, the way in which that was fulfilled. And then we have our fifth vial, verse 10, and the fifth angel poured out his bowl upon the sun, or the seat of the beast, I should say, or the throne of the beast, as it should be. And the throne of the beast, his kingdom, was full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain. Let's just finish off the little chart. And in verse 12, the sixth angel poured out his bowl upon the great river Euphrates, which will be the content of our study tomorrow morning. And then our seventh vial in verse 17, the seventh angel poured out his bowl into the arena or the aerial of the kingdom of men. That will be our last study together on Friday morning. Now let's just have a look, brothers and sisters, again, a little sweep, an overview with some extra detail, and then we'll pull back and look at the detail in much more richness in Revelation 16. Now what I want to do with this little skip through the overview of these vials is I want to begin with this verse and this chapter. Brothers and sisters, there are alarm bells that God is causing you and me to have ringing in our minds. Because when you pick up Revelation chapter 15 and verse 1 as an introduction into these seven vials that are to come, you read these words. These words are for us. Verse 1, Revelation 15. And I saw another sign in heaven, great and marvelous, seven angels having the seven last smitings. There are no more after this, brothers and sisters. God has judged pagan Rome. God has judged the Latin West with the German barbarians. God has judged the Hellenized East with the Saracens. God has judged the Hellenic East with the Turks. God has judged France and Europe through Revelation and chapter 11. And all those judgments, all that sweep of history, God is saying to you and me, here are the alarm bells. God is saying, these are the last. There are no more. Brothers and sisters, get our house in order. Get our ecclesias in order. Get our families in order. There are no more smitings after these. These are the last. And therefore, with those ringing bells in our ears of alarm and of attention and of exhortation, we then begin to see what began nearly or just around 200 years ago. So we have the first bowl being poured out upon the earth. And there was a malignant ulcer which would spring out of France and affect all of these other areas. And this would be beginning with the first vial, the French Revolution. Now, I've got here 1789.
You'll see a lot of writings that say the first vial began in 1792 with the France becoming a republic. I have no problem with that. However, the beginning of this malignant ulcer was local to start with and sprung out of the French Revolution. It was when France became a republic that it really then gathered momentum and spilt out into the Holy Roman Empire. But I have no problems with 1792. I would prefer to see it starting in 1789, be that as it were, or may. Our second vial is poured out upon the sea. This would be the British naval blockade. 1793, this was when the Reign of Terror was going on in France. The guillotine, blood flowing everywhere, heads being chopped off, people being taken out in leaky boats and sunk in rivers and the ocean. An awful place to be. And while this awful Reign of Terror was going on in France, out come the Brits. Rule Britannia, rule the waves. The second vial. The third vial was poured out upon the fountains and rivers of waters. This would be Napoleon's Alpine campaigns. Ah, brothers and sisters, this is where Napoleon came into his own. And Napoleon here is 27 years old and he's a major general. So off goes 27-year-old Major General Napoleon, and he's going to kick out the Austrians from North Italy and Southern Switzerland. This would be his Alpine campaigns. 27-year-old Major General Napoleon is off to complete, unwittingly, the third bowl or vial. We then have our fourth bowl poured out upon the sun. And this would be Napoleon's European wars. He's going to Vienna. He's going to take out the Holy Roman Empire. He's no longer 27-year-old Major General. He is now Emperor Napoleon. And he has been for 1 year. So Emperor Napoleon, off he goes to deal with Vienna, to deal with the Emperor, and to deal with the Holy Roman Empire, to deal with Austria. And then we have the fifth vial poured out upon the throne of the beast. The papacy would not escape. And this would be 1808 in our fifth vial. And then, of course, our sixth vial, brothers and sisters, is 1820 and the drying up of the... Oh, so what, brothers and sisters? Who cares? Who cares about a bunch of French history that happened nearly 200 years? Who cares about all these little things that Napoleon did? The angels do. God does. And so do we. Because, brothers and sisters, this history that happened, these stepping stones that the angels brought about, God moving them, these are all stepping stones leading inexorably to the work that we are going to complete in the seventh vial, leading to Revelation 18 and verse 21, "Thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down and shall be found no more at all." That is why we can't cast away and say, "Ah, that's just a bunch of French history. Who cares?" We do care. Because as we said in our first study on Sunday, we are going to be handed the role to complete that work that has been done on our behalf. What an amazing thing. Well, brothers and sisters, these first five vials would be completed by that man whom God raised up. There he is in 1804 at his coronation in Notre Dame wearing Caesar's crown. Oh, he wanted to be Caesar. He wanted to be Alexander. He wanted to be Constantine. Anyone great and greater was this man. He was an unwitting instrument of the judgment on the Holy Roman Empire and the Catholic Church. And Napoleon saw himself as an instrument of providence. This is what he said about himself. "I am the instrument of providence. She will use me as long as I accomplish her designs. And then she will break me as a glass." Not she, not her, God, he will use Napoleon as long as he accomplishes God's designs. And when God finished with Napoleon, he broke him as a glass in 1815 at Waterloo. And therefore, Napoleon's campaigns brought untold suffering to Italy, to Austria, to Prussia, which was a fitting vengeance for the blood of God's servants and the anti-papal witnesses that we looked at in Revelation 11, who had been persecuted mercilessly by that monster of Catholicism. And so, brothers and sisters, we pick up the record in verse 2 and Revelation chapter 16, and we read these words. And the first angel went and poured out his bowl upon the earth, and there fell a grievous sore upon men which had the mark of the beast, and upon them which worshipped his image, upon the earth. So this first bowl goes upon the earth. Well, what earth was this? Well, of course, this is the Roman earth. We looked at that in Revelation 11 and verse 4. The witnesses stood against the God of the earth. So we have the Roman earth that this is going to be poured out upon. Now, when you have a look at this Roman earth, brothers and sisters, we're talking about the Holy Roman Empire. Now, there is the Holy Roman Empire as it started in 800 AD with Charlemagne, Charles the Magnificent. Karl, they called him, K-A-R-L. So in 800 AD, in comes the Holy Roman Empire, the two-horned earth beast of Revelation 13, an emperor and the pope, the two horns on the lamb. And when the lamb opened its mouth, there came out the voice of the dragon. It spoke like a dragon. So here we've got the earth, the Holy Roman Empire. Interesting, you know, that a Frank, Charlemagne, a Frenchman, if you will, bought in the Holy Roman Empire. And a Frenchman, albeit born in Corsica, but certainly waved the French flag when he was the emperor, a Frenchman would take the Holy Roman Empire out. So a Frenchman brought it in, and a Frenchman would take it out 1,000 years later. Well, the Holy Roman Empire, as years rolled by, began to contract eastward. And therefore, in 1250, the Holy Roman Empire, or the earth, looked more like that as it begins to contract toward the east. Add another couple of hundred years, and this is what the Holy Roman Empire looked like. And brothers and sisters, this is pretty much the lie of the land at the time of Napoleon. And this is where the first bowl would be poured out upon the earth. Now you can see there that France is ruling within her own right. France was loosely connected to the Holy Roman Empire by a series of marriages, like Louis XVI married Marie Antoinette, the daughter of the emperor in Austria of the Holy Roman Empire. So France ruling in her own right, but was loosely connected to the Holy Roman Empire. So this earth where the first bowl is poured out is the earth beast, the Holy Roman Empire of Revelation chapter 13, the earth. And then, brothers and sisters, we read this. There fell a noisome and grievous sore as this ulcer began to permeate out from France. And therefore, the Greek word for grievous sore is the Greek word poneros. It means hurtful. Literally, you read that expression there in the Greek, literally it is an evil, the word noisome, evil, malignant ulcer. The RSV translates it this way, and a foul and painful sore came upon all those who had the mark of the beast, all those who lived and loved the Holy Roman Empire. Now, have a look at this, brothers and sisters, with respect to this malignant ulcer. Now, here we are, 1795, the lie of the land. And there you can see, perhaps, the Holy Roman Empire there outlined in red. Now, this malignant ulcer, this spirit of revolution, This would come from France locally to start with, and then it would begin to spread throughout the earth, the Roman earth, the HRE. So, beginning in France, with the proclamation of the Republic in 1792, the effects of the French Revolution spread as a malignant ulcer throughout all of Europe. And therefore, brothers and sisters, the reason it began locally in France was because of what happened in chapter 11. Because of France's cooperation with the papacy and the persecution of the witnesses. And because of that, all this awfulness would spring up on the body of France and then spill out through the rest of Europe. And therefore, this malignancy would cause millions to die in Europe. And in France, the Catholic Church was overthrown, the monasteries were confiscated, vestiges of the papacy were burnt in France, and millions of people died in France, and then that commenced a shockwave of revolution throughout all of Europe. What an amazing thing. Well, God put a great big rope or fence around that area and said, although Napoleon didn't hear it, and said to Napoleon, "You stay there. That is your paddock. Don't go out. I have a work for you to accomplish in five vials. That is the arena within which God intended Napoleon to work. You tell that to Napoleon, brothers and sisters. I'm going to Egypt." And off he did. "You don't belong in Egypt, Napoleon." And when he went down there, brothers and sisters, it was a disaster. Oh, he wrote up a few little wars that he had in Palestine and down there in Cairo. It was a disaster. "Napoleon, you think you're going to go to Britain? Forget it." He thought about taking it twice. No way. It was a disaster even to contemplate taking the Brits. My apology to those who are of the British stock in this audience. But brothers and sisters, he wanted to go to Russia, and he did go to Russia. "What are you doing, Napoleon? You do not go outside that paddock." He took 600,000 men with him to Russia, and 500,000 perished in the snow just because of the weather. You do not belong in Russia. Therefore, every time Napoleon strayed out of the boundary within which God intended him to work and fulfill these five vials, every time he strayed out, he was defeated. But every time he fought within those perimeters, he was always victorious until Waterloo. But then God had finished with him and broke him as a glass. What an amazing thing. Well, brothers and sisters, here is the second vial. Now, I want to show you in this, very, very briefly, how the overarching of the Brits compelled Napoleon to remain within the paddock within which God had intended him to work to ensure these other vials were in fact fulfilled. So, we read in verse 3 these words. "And the second angel poured out his bowl upon the sea, and it became as the blood of a dead man, and every living soul died in the sea." Well, of course, this was the blockade of Europe by the maritime forces, and Britain would dominate the oceans. And the seas that we're talking about are the Mediterranean and the surrounding seas around Europe. So there is a great big rope, a great big chain, a great big barrier that the angels, using the British, to block Napoleon in and to keep Napoleon in the arena within which God had intended him to be. And therefore God would raise up the genius of Admiral Horatio Nelson to bring about the fulfillment of this second vial. And what Horatio Nelson was on the sea, Napoleon was on the land, and they would pit their skills one against the other. And Napoleon said, "We've got to put all our strength." He knew what they had to do with the Brits. "We have to put all our strength upon the sea. We've got to destroy England. And if we do, the continent will be at our feet." And so therefore, brothers and sisters, Admiral Nelson, God used him in order that the Brits might defeat numerically superior forces. And by Trafalgar, the Battle of Trafalgar in 1805, Britain completely dominated the seas and did so for the next 50 years. Now, I wanted to show you a little time chart.
want to show you how the overarching Brits compelled vials 3, 4, and 5 to be completed. This is how it works. Here's a little timeline of our vials. Now, there is our first vial there on the earth, beginning in 1789 and sweeping through, well, 1793. Then we have the second vial, out come the Brits, and we've got now 1793 through 1805, the Battle of Trafalgar. We made the point here that for the next 50 years, the Brits would still dominate the oceans, and therefore, let's push out that domination on the seas. Now we have our third vial, and our third vial is overarched by the second, compelling Napoleon to complete a work. And this would be 1796 through 1804, where Napoleon would go on his Alpine campaigns, 27-year-old Major General Napoleon. Then we have the fourth vial, overarched by the British, overarched by the second vial, to ensure that this would be also completed. And there he goes off with his European wars to Austria and Vienna. And then we have the fifth vial, overarched again by the second vial, causing Napoleon to stay where he should have been, where he would then complete the work of the throne of the beast and deal with Roman Catholicism. So there it is. Now, let brothers and sisters, a little example. The overarchingness of the British compelling Napoleon to stay put. See how this works by a little example. I'm not going to talk a lot about battles, just one, maybe two, but that's all, but not a lot about them. As an example of how the second overarched the third. In August 1798, a French fleet was defeated by a smaller British armada commanded by Admiral Nelson at the Battle of the Nile at Aboukir. Now, Aboukir is there. So Napoleon says, I'm going to Egypt. Why? Well, because Alexander went to Egypt. And I'm going down there and I'm going to go into Palestine. I'm going to use Palestine as a base. I'm going to go then to India because Alexander went to India. I'm going to cut off the trade between India and the Brits. And what's more, when Napoleon was in Palestine, what did he do, brothers and sisters? He then started to implement the bringing back of the nation of Israel. And when the British heard that, and other European countries heard that, they said, what? The French being there in the land of Israel, in the centre of the world? No way. And that hurried up the British. That hurried up a few other nations to get put and to get moving to then do something with Israel. So here's Napoleon. He comes down to Egypt. And as he's going through the Mediterranean with his fleet, he's dodging and trying to make sure that he didn't bump into Admiral Nelson. And he gets down to Alexandria and he marches with his 47,000 men and he marches down to Cairo. And he's going to come down into Egypt, kick out the Mamelukes who were ruling in Egypt at that time, and then move up into Palestine and then finally into India. But brothers and sisters, with his 47,000 men, he marches from Alexandria and they march down to Cairo. They had no idea about the heat. They had no idea about the lack of water. And hundreds of those 47,000 men literally put guns to their head and committed suicide because of the heat and the lack of water. And when Napoleon got down there into Cairo, brothers and sisters, along came Admiral Nelson and saw all these ships anchored there and blew them to bits. And there was Napoleon stranded in Egypt with his 30,000 men, and he couldn't get back. And he couldn't get back with all his men. He had no ships to take them back with. And all these things are unraveling in Europe. All the things that he put into place previous to going down into Egypt were all, and he's got to get back. And he's got to slink back on his own in disguise. You should not be in Egypt, the angels were saying. God has put a rope around you. There's a paddock there. There's a fence for you, and you stay there. There's an example how the Brits compelled him to rethink where he was and to get back into Europe. So, brothers and sisters, the defeat left Napoleon stranded in Egypt and left a coalition and led to a coalition of European states against France, and he had to get back and put those matters in order. How you doing? Who doesn't like history? Don't put your hand up.
I can assure you, brothers and sisters, there's some exhortation along the way. There'll be a lot of exhortation in tomorrow's study, but I do find history, not history for the sake of history, when it's the Bible and when the angels are there, I just picture them. I see them pushing that man, pushing that man, pushing that woman. It is just wonderful the way that happens. So, brothers and sisters, here now is the third vial. And when we have a look at the third vial, having already looked at the overarching, the rope, the congealing of the flow with the British, compelling Napoleon to be where he should have been, well, he's now going to complete this third vial. And we read here that the third angel poured out his bowl on the rivers and fountains of waters. So you can see there, brothers and sisters, there's the bowl. It's being poured out on this area here, north of Italy, south of Switzerland, an area that was prolific with lakes and rivers. But it was an area, brothers and sisters, that was rich in persecution. Wrong word probably to use next to persecution, but you'll see what I mean in a moment. This would be Napoleon's Alpine campaign as he comes to northern Italy and he takes the Pope prisoner. And therefore what Napoleon would do, he would come from Paris, he's going to come down to Toulon, pick up some men down there, and he's going to come to this area here. Now, we read a moment ago in verse 6, God was going to bring them blood to drink, for they are worthy. And that verse 6 is particularly and peculiarly related to this third vial. There's this area of Piedmont, which was particularly going to be judged because of what the Catholics did to the Waldenses and the Albigenses. Here were men and women, the Waldenses and the Albigenses, living in this area of Piedmont. They were living a peaceful, quiet life and trying to give their life to God. They were just trying to read the Bible readings after dinner. They were trying to hold their heads up to Christ. They were trying to walk faithfully before God. And the Roman Catholics persecuted them awfully in that area, so much so that rivers became rivers of blood. God was not to forget that. The angels were commissioned to pour blood out with alacrity in that area because of what the Roman Catholics had done previously. And so off goes this 27-year-old to fulfill this third vial. Now, brothers and sisters, before we just have a little couple of minute walk with him up into this area of the fountains and rivers of waters, I just want to tell you a couple of things about Napoleon. I just want you to get the feel of this fellow that God raised up as a vessel. Now, Napoleon was born in 1769. He died in 1821. He was 52. When Napoleon was 9 years old, in 1778, he entered a French military school. And when he entered this school, the other kids kicked him around. They teased him because he had this thick Corsican accent. And because he was being teased by the other kids, it forced Napoleon to go into his books, particularly mathematics. In fact, one instructor said, "You're a very studious young man. You would make a very, very good naval officer in the British Navy." What a thing to say. No way. The angels are not going to put him in the British Navy. The angels are going to have him fighting the British Navy. So here he is, brothers and sisters. He's 9 years old and he's antisocial. Forced to go into his books. Mind you, the few times that Napoleon was social, he dominated. Surprise, surprise. So here he is, he's 9 years old. Now, brothers and sisters, when Napoleon was 16, in 1785, he was commissioned second lieutenant. And he's 16. When Napoleon was 23, in 1792, that's when France became a republic, he was promoted to captain and he's 23 years old. Where's the French Revolution? The French Revolution is there. Napoleon is 20 when the French Revolution breaks out. So he's 23 and it's 1792 and he's promoted to captain. Well, when he's 24, he's made Brigadier General and it's now 1793. Brothers and sisters, 1793, this is the reign of terror going on in France. And in 1793, the people have had 4 years of revolution and they're sick to death of blood, they're sick to death of the guillotine, they're sick to death of all this Inquisition stuff. And in 1793, there becomes a groundswell in Paris and people are starting to say, we don't want the revolution anymore. We want Louis Bat. We want the Bourbons. We want the monarchy. And there's this crazed mob moving through Paris, 25,000 of them saying, we want Louis back. It's a mob. It's a crazed mob. And the government of the day is saying, how are we going to control this crazed mob? I know. We'll get Napoleon. He might only be 5'6", but he can handle a crazed mob. And therefore, brothers and sisters, Napoleon comes out and he says to his mate, get a cannon. And his mate said, what do you want me to do? Stick it in the street. He said, what are you going to do? He said, watch. And all these people that are coming through, 25,000 chanting, we want Louis back, we want the monarchy. And then Napoleon says to him, mate, let it off. Boom, brothers and sisters, he blew a cannon through his own people and killed 200. They've got problems on their border with the Austrians, with the Prussians and with the Russians. And Napoleon is firing cannons into his own people. Well, if you do that in France and in Paris, you get promoted. And so they promoted him, brothers and sisters. They promoted him to Major General. And he's 26 years old. He turned to his mate and said, well, I guess we just gave them a whiff of grape shot, didn't we? And that merited promotion. And there he is, brothers and sisters. He is Major General and he's 26 years old. Nearly ready to be the Major General, 27-year-old, marching off to the Third Vial, his work in the Alpine campaign. Oh, well, it wasn't all war for Napoleon. There was love in the air. And Napoleon met Josephine. And she was quite old, 37. She had 2 children. And her time was running out, and she had to catch the stars that went by. And he was a younger person than her, 10 years. He was a star, and so she married him. And Napoleon spent 1 or 2 nights with his new bride and said, darling, we've had time together. That's all I can give you. I must be off. I'm off to my Alpine campaign. I will write. And off he went. So therefore, brothers and sisters, he's 27-year-old, and he's off to the Alpine regions. He's off to kick the Austrians out of northern Italy and southern Switzerland. Just finish the chart off. When he's 30, 10 years after the revolution began, he comes into Paris in a coup d'etat and he seizes power. Now, what you've got to understand is this. Between here and there, between there and there, he goes down to Egypt. Right? That little jaunt down to Egypt and leaves his 30,000 men. So after he marries Josephine, says bye-bye, doll, goes up, does the Alpine campaign, and then comes back, then he goes down to Egypt, and then he comes back on his own, leaving his 30,000 men there. That's when he seizes power and says, I am your first consul, soon to be your emperor. What an amazing thing. So here we go, brothers and sisters. A minute. Oh, yeah, we're going all right. Don't look at your clock. Only I'm allowed to do that. So here he comes. He's going into the Alpine campaigns. Now, Napoleon's got to come down from Paris, and he's got to come down to Toulon, and he's got to pick up the Italian army. And he's got to take them and he's got to go and deal with the Austrians in this area. Brothers and sisters, he gets down to Toulon and he sees these blokes down there and he says, who are you? And they say, we're the Italian army. He said, where's your horses? They said, we ate them. He said, where's your guns? They said, we left them in the field of battle. Brothers and sisters, you've never seen such a ragtag, forlorn, decrepit bunch of blokes. And he's got to take them and he's got 3 months to whip them into gear and get them in there to get the Austrians. I'm going back to Josephine. I'm not staying with you blokes. No way. Brothers and sisters, 3 months. And he whipped them into gear, this forlorn, ragtag, decrepit bunch of blokes. He, with his electricity of his presence, with his charisma, he whipped them into gear. And in 3 months, he marches up there, and there was a war there. And then, brothers and sisters, there was another war there as God is pouring out this bowl. And there were wars all over this area of fountains and rivers of waters. And therefore, in fulfillment of the words of the prophecy, the third angel poured out his bowl upon the rivers and fountains of waters, and they became blood. All right, let's deal with the Pope. So the Pope is given blood to drink in this vial. So after defeating the Austrians, 27-year-old Major General in Lombardy. Napoleon turned down to go to the Pope. Oh, the Pope heard he was coming. So the Pope got a group of fellas together with pikes and lances and stuff like that. They're going to take on the Grand Army. No way. No, the Pope was in no condition to be able to deal with a Grand Army. And therefore, Napoleon defeated the papacy at Faenza and at Ancona. And with Napoleon advancing on Rome, the Pope sued for peace. Well, Napoleon is finished. He's now going to come back, brothers and sisters, to Paris. And as he comes back in triumph to Paris, everybody loves him. His men will do anything for him. This man is the man of the moment. Brothers and sisters, he's coming back to Paris and he's coming back to an unstable, shaky, corrupt government. They don't want Napoleon in Paris. He's too good and too dangerous. Napoleon has been over there negotiating with the Pope. Napoleon has been over there negotiating with the King of Naples. Napoleon has been over there coding law. Napoleon has been over there carving up land. He's more than a military man. He's a politician. No, he's a government on the move. And Paris doesn't want him. He's too dangerous. We've got to get him out doing something. Give him a project, the government in Paris said. Let's get him busy doing, I know, we'll get him to invade England. Go and invade England. So Napoleon goes to think about invading England. And there he is, standing at Calais, and he's looking out over the channel, and he's thinking, England, what do I need? Not hard to defeat the Brits, really, is it, brothers and sisters? What do I need? So Napoleon's thinking, boats, boats, boats. I need some flat-bottom boats. I probably need 800, 600, 200. I need 200 flat-bottom boats. How many men do I need? Oh, 80,000, 60, 40,000 men. 200 flat-bottom boats, 40,000 men. How long do I need to be on the channel? 6 hours. I need 200 flat-bottom boats, 40,000 men, 6 hours on the channel. I need the Dutch and I need the Spanish. Thank God the Brits have dealt with them. They haven't got them. Oh, brothers and sisters, think about it. If he put his foot in the water, the Brits would have blown it off in about 3 seconds. No way could he take the Brit. So he went back to them and he said, nope, no way, it cannot be done. Well, go down to Egypt. Do you see? So after he'd come back from his Alpine campaign, thought about taking Britain, couldn't be done, so go down to Egypt. So that's when he went down there. And when he went down to Egypt, in Napoleon's absence, the Austrians, with the help from Russia, retook Italy. All that he'd done, after he'd said goodbye to Josephine, all that he'd done was all reversed. You do not belong in Egypt. You can't take Britain. Get back in the paddock that you belong in. And therefore, in Egypt, he forsook his army, returned to Paris, where by the turn of events, at 30 years old, 10 years after the revolution began, he became the first consul after the coup d'etat of 1799. Well, brothers and sisters, nearly there, not far to go with our study. All going okay? All right, very good. You're a good audience. I've only counted about 10 that are asleep this morning. Now, brothers and sisters, this is the beginning of the end for Napoleon. There he is about to crown himself in Notre Dame. He'd heard of a man who crowned himself 1,000 years before, Charlemagne. But Charlemagne went to Rome. Napoleon says, no, the Pope comes to me in Notre Dame, in Paris. And therefore, brothers and sisters, that painting is a very famous and well-known painting. I'm sure many of you have seen that. There's Josephine and there's Napoleon about to crown himself, and there's the Pope sitting there. Now, see over there, there is Napoleon's mother. Actually, Christine and I have actually stood on that very spot in Notre Dame where Napoleon crowned himself. And I looked up there and I tried to imagine where his mum should have been, because you see, Napoleon's mother wasn't there. She said, I'm not coming. I don't like Josephine. I am not happy that she's going to be the next empress. I am not coming. Well, when the painter came to Napoleon and said, I'm doing this painting now, but your mother's not there. What will I do? Napoleon said, paint her in. And the painter said, what will she say? She will thank me later. Paint her in. And you see, brothers and sisters, there's the Pope there. He's got his hand up there. It looks like he's doing something. He wasn't doing that. Napoleon said, you sit there. You just put your hand still. Don't move. Now, after the painter started painting, Napoleon said, oh, I did bring him over here. You better make... Look, just rearrange his hands. Make out he's doing the sign of the cross or something. Brothers and sisters, Napoleon did what he liked. He called the shots. He might have been only 5'6", but he had the ego of an 8-foot giant. He did what he liked, did Napoleon. And therefore, this would be the unravelling of the man, and this would be the beginning of the end for him. Now, we've just got time for this last two vials, probably about 2 minutes on this, but I want you to be so alert. Right? Just move in your seats. Just, okay, do a bit of a wiggle. Don't do it too much because it looks silly. I need you to focus because this next vial is astounding. It's just astounding the way the Bible just brings these things together. Now, just this one, just stay with us. This is the fourth vial that would be poured out upon the Son. So this would be Napoleon's campaigns against the Holy Roman Empire, the beast. Okay? Now, what we read, brothers and sisters, with respect to this, the Austrian campaign, Napoleon's going to come into Vienna and he's going to defeat Austria and bring an end to an empire that has existed for 1,000 years or so. Now, what we read, brothers and sisters, is this, the sun. Now, the sun is a symbol, of course, of political power. If we were to go to Psalm 89, verse 36, which we won't, we read of the Lord Jesus Christ, who will be the S-U-N and will rule in political authority over a world of righteousness. That is Psalm 89, verse 36. We read in Revelation 8 and verse 12 that the sun, the great political power of the Roman world, would be eclipsed. We read in Revelation 12, a verse you know very, very well, and verse 1, where Constantine gives this woman political authority by clothing her with the sun. So the sun of Europe that Napoleon's going to take out had been the Holy Roman Empire since AD 800. Now here, listen to this. You're with me? It's the early morning session. You're all awake. Or some of you are starting to wake up. Now listen to this, brothers and sisters. What has Revelation chapter 12, verse 1, a woman clothed with the sun, got to do with Charlemagne, who brought in the Holy Roman Empire, and Napoleon, who's going to take the Holy Roman Empire out? Charlemagne, Napoleon, Revelation 12, verse 1, a woman clothed. What's all that got to do together? I tell you this, a lot. Have a look at this, brothers and sisters. He's going to take out what was brought in 1,000 years ago. So Charlemagne and Napoleon and a son, all wrapped up together. What does that mean? Well, have a look at this. There's a cathedral built by Charlemagne in Aachen. Charlemagne built that, who brought in the Holy Roman Empire, the son that Napoleon's going to take out. Now, Aachen is there, brothers and sisters, and Charlemagne was born in Aachen, and Charlemagne built that temple in Aachen. So what? When you go inside that temple, as we will now, and notwithstanding the wonder of those stained glass windows, there in the temple or the cathedral that Charlemagne built is a woman clothed with the sun, the moon under her feet, and a 12-starred crown around her head. Who put that there? Charlemagne. He got that from Revelation 12. And so here is Charlemagne putting a woman clothed with the sun, and under that woman clothed with the sun, no less than 32 emperors of the Holy Roman Empire were crowned under a sun. And Napoleon's going to come and take it out. What an amazing thing, brothers and sisters. He's going to remove what Charlemagne put there, and it's all in the context of a sun, political power. What an amazing thing. And therefore, from 1438 through to 1806, the rulers came almost invariably from Austria, the rulers of the Holy Roman Empire. And so the ruler of Austria, which Napoleon's going to take out, was regarded as the ruler or the son of the Holy Roman Empire. What an astounding thing. Well, brothers and sisters, he's going to come and take the sun away and scorch men with fire. Scorch men with fire? Do you know, if you were alive at that time and you read the British tabloids, constantly, Constantly, they were writing about this man streaming around Europe, and they called him the Man of Fire. Everything about Napoleon in the English, he's fire. He sets these cannons off, and it's fire, and it's smoke. You would have been astounded to see this title that was given to him, fire, fire, fire. And therefore, when you have a look at this little excerpt from Henrietta Marsh, who wrote about Napoleon, she really zooms in. Was an angel moving her pen, moving her writing? Have a look at this, brothers and sisters. The Story of Napoleon by Henrietta Marsh. Fire. Many of the Mamelukes threw themselves into the Nile in panic. This is a two-hour battle of the pyramids. 2 hours. Napoleon's down there in Egypt, and it's a two-hour battle of the pyramids. Actually, the battle took place in a vegetable patch, like lettuces, carrots, beets. It's not very romantic, is it? I mean, you couldn't say Napoleon beat the Mamelukes at the Battle of the Vegetable Patch. So there were pyramids in the background, so they thought, this is good, this is more romantic. So at the Battle of the Pyramids, in 2 hours, Napoleon defeated the Mamelukes. So many of the Mamelukes, brothers and sisters, threw themselves into the Nile in panic of flight. Many were cut down by the pursuing French. Those who escaped were carried to all parts of Egypt, and they carried the fame and terror of Sultan Kabir, the King of Fire. What an amazing thing. And God just simply says, the angels, he is the man would scorch others with fire. Well, brothers and sisters, we just summarize now the fifth vial and our time is cracking on very nicely. Verse 10. And the fifth angel poured out his bowl upon the throne of the beast, and his kingdom was full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain. Well, the fifth and final vial of our session this morning would be poured out there upon Rome. Napoleon's Italian campaign and the Papal States would fall and Rome would be taken. Therefore, in summary, in April 1809, Napoleon took the Pope prisoner, the Roman state was abolished, and the Pope was banished from Rome. Brothers and sisters, flick through that. The papal throne had been abolished. Napoleon's work was done. And his further campaign simply added to the absolute misery already experienced by the worshippers of the beast. And therefore, Napoleon was exiled. God had finished with him. God had broken him as a glass at the battle of Waterloo in 1815. And Napoleon was exiled to the remote Atlantic island of St. Helena. And Napoleon died in 1821, and he was 52. And John Thomas was 16 when Napoleon died. No wonder when he discovered the truth. No wonder as a boy growing up, and as a young teenager, reading the English tabloids, hearing and seeing firsthand all these events that were going, no wonder when Brother Thomas wrote, he wrote with a pen of fire that flashed with the urgency and the enthusiasm of the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ. And therefore, brethren and sisters, we summarise and say this, that if the French Revolution had not happened, Revelation 11, if the wars in Europe did not take place, Revelation 16. If the church and state had not been separated, you and I would not be sitting here today with our Bibles on our laps. As bad as the revolution was, as horrific as those wars in Europe were, the angels were working for you and me. And we should tremble with absolute awe and thankfulness that God has used them so diligently to bring you and I here this morning to open up our Bibles and read of that marvellous work. Therefore, brothers and sisters, tomorrow our study will then take ourselves into this generation, and lots of exhortation and sober warning as we consider, God willing, tomorrow morning our study on the sixth vial, A Way Prepared.